Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 239. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. Officially the... It's the first official quarantined podcast for us. First time I think we're all officially work from home, stuck at home for the foreseeable future.
Have you guys left the house at all?
Oh, your gain is very up on your microphone.
Oh, it always happens.
What a start. What an electric start. I left my house to go to Whole Foods. That was a surreal experience. We won't harp too much on it because I know people they also want to break from talking about this and just want to laugh and talk movies. But surreal experience walking up to the door, not realizing that. So a lot of places are doing the first hour is just 60 or over, but I thought it was they open an hour early for 60 or over. So you go to the door and they're basically checking IDs. They're like, check for Whole Foods. That was a pretty surreal moment. Otherwise, I just left the house for groceries. That's about it. It was really warm in New York, and all of a sudden, it's just not warm anymore. As you would know, Trill, across the water in Hoboken.
I left today to I'd had an ingrown toenail that I tried to fix on my own.
And explain that really quick.
I tried to get in there with a pair of clippers and just rip out the ingrown toenail itself, but it was too deep in there for me to go, and so I had. Like it was making me miserable. So I had to schedule an appointment with the foot doctor, the podiatrist. So I left, drove straight to the podiatrist. They, you know, numbed my foot up and they removed it. And I sent you guys the picture and it was so gross.
It was nasty.
It was like a chicken hook that was just buried into my toe bed. So it's good to have that out, even though I can't feel my toe right now.
I can't feel my toe when I'm with you. It was absolutely gross.
It was like pearly white.
I thought you got your tooth pulled, and I zoomed in very as much as possible on the phone. I'm like, oh man, he got his tooth pulled. It's just a shame. And you're like, it's an ingrown toenail.
Yeah, it looked like one of those like shark teeth that you pull, get to like a aquarium or something. And then I was like, why is that other guest wearing surgical gloves? Oh, this is something that came out of Troll's body.
And the doctor was like, you have very wide toenail beds. Like, this is just something you got to watch out for. Well, so you probably should schedule a regular appointment. I was like, doctor, this is how you get me. I can't be in a subscription service with my podiatrist. I can't afford that shit. I'm going to come back when this has to happen. And I got to tell you, buddy, I've ratcheted up the security precautions to new levels. I'm spritzing the sanitizer. I'm popping off. I got the spray sanitizer. I'm using it all over. I'm trying to be as responsible as I can. So it's still surreal to get out of the house.
Yeah, no, I've been trying to just clean out the apartment. I'm about 4 days now without leaving the apartment, and it doesn't feel that different, but I'm definitely feel like I'm going a little stir crazy.
Well, we also worked from home. So obviously when we quit our jobs before we went to Barstool, we worked from home for like 5 months. So this, and though you're in a different apartment, I'm in the apartment I was in. My setup is actually better. So I'm okay with it. Like, I don't mind it. I like our office. We have a fun, bustling office. We have things that were starting to happen that have been delayed. So like, that's a bummer. But in terms of having to work here, it's like, we're kind of used to it, I think. So it's not the absolute. It's not the worst in that sense.
Definitely more than your average person.
And we have desks too. Like, someone who doesn't have a, like, I have a desk and a big monitor. I'm like, I love my computer, but I get how, like, if that's not your setup at home, it could be a tough adjust.
I do mine laying down. We had these things called Nuggets, which are, you know, big foam pillows. And I created a bed out of them. I prop myself up and baby runs around and sometimes comes over, tries to slap my work computer. And I'm just slinging the, you know, there's a new X lookup in Excel. I'm just slinging some of the lookups. I've used the X lookup a couple times. It's good, man. I mean, my mental health, look, like I said, like I live my life in a fog of anxiety, and this doesn't help, but it almost is like, I was talking to my wife. I was like, you know, it's kind of fucked up that, like, I spend my life thinking about, like, you know, like I have this weird thing where, like, if I'm driving in my car and I like pay attention to the song or something, I'm like, did I hit somebody? Did I like unconsciously hit somebody? And I'll have to drive back and check, like, I'm that crazy. And so I prepare for all these crazy situations that never happen. And then not once in my mind did I ever consider that this situation could possibly happen to us. It's fucked up. I feel like my brain really failed me there.
No, I feel you. It's definitely, I don't think any of us really expected something like this. Not to go a little bit too off, but what's the Yoda toy in the background?
Yeah, I was about to say.
I've been staring at it for like 10 minutes.
You have a Yoda Lego. This is probably bad radio, and we're going to get to a cut. We're going to have some fun today. We got to explain, because we have a new format of the show kind of going forward, because sometimes when a podcast that relies on new movie releases is caught in a pandemic where no new movies come out, you have to change up what you do. We'll get to that, though. But, Trill, it looks like you have not kicked the Lego edition, because there's a gigantic box of a large Yoda Lego behind you.
Yeah, my wife was running out for supplies, and she got the big old Yoda Lego. It's
they were almost sold out. Meanwhile, Aquafina not touched.
Yeah.
Looks like a fun Lego.
No eggs at all. Eggs are in back order, but we got the Yoda Lego.
You got the goop eggs. You don't have to worry about it. They're still unordered.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on here. For now on, we will be doing two throwback reviews that are on streaming platforms. If companies release these movies, the bigger releases online, we'll do them. I am not going to ask people to pay $20 for something like Bloodshot and review it. I'm because I know movies cost different across the country. You can buy it if you want. We'll probably do written reviews. If like Black Widow comes out on streaming, we'll do that. If like Wonder Woman 1984 come out, we'll do that. Those for new movie reviews. But for now, until something drops on streaming, we're just going to stick to older movies. We're doing Zodiac today, David Fincher movie. A lot of people asked for it in the last couple of days. So we're going to do Zodiac. It's on Netflix and Amazon Prime. And then Sunday, we're going to be doing Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. So we'll change it up. We'll probably go either alternate like drama, action, and comedy, or good movie, bad movie. But we'll keep it mixed up for the foreseeable future, because it's probably going to be a while.
We got we got in the topic, right? Talking about the movies coming to the on demand.
Yeah, it's in our news too. Right. And I'll tell you what, this is going to be one of the last few days of it's like one of the last pods of a lot of movie news too. It's going to start dwindling down. So we'll fill in some segments. We're going to get back talking about food and stuff too, I'm sure, you know.
We have to get freaky with it.
Yeah, we are. Mm-hmm. We are. Also, every Tuesday and Thursday night for the foreseeable future on the LCB YouTube channel, which you can subscribe to below in the description below, we will be going live on YouTube with guests from our office. Trill, you're always free to join. You know that. Obviously, we don't have children to look after, so that makes a big difference. But we'll be going live on YouTube. And you can watch us, and then we will have a second window on YouTube with the timer, so you can sync the movie up with us. We did this for Phantom Menace on Tuesday. Threw some memes up there, looked up some fun facts, pictures. It was a good time. A lot of people were in the chat. We had a good amount of people, like 600-700 people on the first try, like stay throughout the entire movie. So we're doing another one Thursday, March 19th. Looks like we're going to be doing the second Austin Powers movie. We got a couple other Barstool guys joining us, KB, Nick, and then we're going to add more people each time. So every Tuesday and Thursday night on the YouTube channel, it's a good time. We're also going to try a new thing called like Netflix Party, I think. I would look it up. You can add it to Google Chrome, and you're going to be able to sync up the exact time that we're at watching the movie as well. So
they used to do that on Xbox Live. You used to do that in a party. It was the fucking shit. I love that so much.
They say this app is pretty good, so I'm excited to try it out. But yeah, just our YouTube page. We'll probably go live at 8:30 Eastern every time. We're going to do Attack of the Clones next Tuesday, so we'll do like kind of the nerdier, different stuff on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We'll go with a vote. We threw up GoldenEye and Austin Powers 2 looks like the second Austin Powers won out. So it was fun. It was a good time. Looking forward to doing more and more of those. I think logistically though, for like what our pod is going to be, that's basically it. It's going to be throwback reviews for the foreseeable future. Just stuff off streaming services. So tweet at us, let us know any ones you want us to review, but we'll mix it up. We'll keep it going. Anything else? I'll give you this. What's the one food you guys stocked up on the most?
Pizza rolls.
Okay.
There were three bags for $5 and three giant bags for $3. Like probably like a 2 pound bag. So I have roughly 6 pounds of pizza rolls in my freezer right now.
Yeah. I got the big bag of pizza rolls and then a 24 pack of ramen, which, could be undershooting it a little bit. But then, you know, there's a bunch of baby food. So if you could just, you know, we talked about the clinking of the glass with the Wii bottles. I could just start doing that with the old baby food that still is good.
Mm-hmm. I
if it is still good, it might not be good. I need to look at that.
I hoarded chicken and rice, got a lot of that.
Like microwavable or?
No, like just like actual like chicken breasts and put in the freezer, we'll thaw it out and make some nice dishes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. I don't know, man. I hoarded, do you guys remember the Brock's Bears?
No.
Like gummy bears?
Yeah, no, they're gigantic gummy bears and they're individually sealed packages. They're like cinnamon bears. They don't make those anymore.
Cinnamon bears.
I didn't get any of those cause they don't make them anymore. But when I was like at the store the other day, I was like, God damn, I wish they had the Brock's Bears.
Yeah. Wow. I have not thought about Brock's Bears in a long time.
They had that like texture that was just you bit them and it had that like shiny, you see your shiny teeth marks all over them. They're delicious. Huh. Loved it.
I don't even think we'll be able to ship because you can't really ship that stuff. But
I apologize. You guys are going to have to put up with my brain for a bit.
That's okay.
It's all over the place. I'm going to get weird with it.
We're going to need to stretch these pods a little bit, but we do have some news today. Actually, we got an ad read first. Folks, most guys have tried different ways to last longer, but thinking about fill in the blank there, thinking about what?
Them damn beans, I guess. That'll make me bust quicker.
Those beans.
Thinking about beans doesn't always work. That's why Roman, men's online health company, changing the way people go about the game with Roman Swipes, a secret to longer lasting sex. Roman Swipes, clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, fast acting. And they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging. And each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. Swipes are great. They won't transfer to your partner, so you can last longer without worrying. Go to GetRoman.com/lights. You can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/lights. All right. Turn on my air conditioner here because let's get into it. Movie news right off the bat. Regal, AMC, Alamo, you name it. They're done. Movie theaters, Cinemark, shut down. There will be no theaters open in the country. So any movie that was supposed to come out between now and probably at least 6 weeks will not be hitting theaters. Black Widow officially delayed. We knew that was inevitable. So we had that question last episode. Will Black Widow be delayed? That was a yes. Then I asked if you'll go to the movie theaters. That's irrelevant because, you just can't go anymore. But this seems like the right move, but probably a rather tough blow for the theater industry, especially at a time where they were struggling to begin with.
I don't know. Like my feeling on this is it makes me sad, right? Like I think it makes everyone sad because it's things we had last week almost. Like maybe not this time last week, but at least 2 weeks ago, you still felt like you could go to a movie theater, and closing them down was the right decision. But it still is, it's like one of those things, it's like, God, you really took for granted all these things you were able to do and didn't do it as often as you maybe wanted to because you were sitting inside. But when they do open back up, man, people are going to go to them. I do think like whenever things clear up, and like I'm personally projecting, I don't know, the fall, as shitty as it is to say, like I think people are going to be itching to go back to them. So yeah, it definitely is not good for the businesses, but there's no other choice.
Mm-hmm. Social responsibility, it's obviously for the best. I do agree with you that I think this is going to make people realize that they kind of maybe took the theater experience for granted and want to go back to that. Yeah. 'Cause you know, everyone always bitches about that, like, oh, I wish I could just watch a movie at home instead of having to go to a theater for it. And I do think this will make people appreciate that experience a little bit more. But it obviously, like I said before, it's for the best.
You know, like what I realized about, like, you know, I've talked about how I like to watch movies at home. It's not so much about the watching on the screen. Like, yeah, like it is nice to go and see a big movie in that big old, it makes it better. There's no doubt about that. It's the disconnection you get. Like you feel like you have a license to just completely disassociate from society. Whenever you go into a movie theater, it's almost just like I'm just going to turn my phone on silent. I'm not going to worry anything about the next 2 hours. When I come out, the sun's going to be in a different position. It was an escape. It was like one of the few businesses I feel like you could go to aside from the go-kart track that actually felt like an escape. So, you know, it's like that amongst everything else. Then what are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think you know, it's tough finding a lot of positives right now, but I think that is one, at least the theater industry. I think people are gonna be like, oh, you know what? Let's get in and see them. It's going to be a mess. I don't know how the fuck things are going to be released. I think some smaller movies might get pushed out because a lot of these big ones, like there are going to be some negatives to it for sure. But I do think people are going to say they miss it. There are going to be some big movies that still hit theaters because it sounds as though things like Bond, Fast, especially F9, which ain't coming out till next year. And then Black Widow is the big example, will not be hitting streaming. Mm-hmm. I know people have talked about Black Widow saying, put it on Disney Plus, let us pay extra money. I'd pay $50 to watch Black Widow. Maybe more, 75. I don't know. Like I would definitely do it. I think it'd be fun. I hope they release it. We do a YouTube stream. We'll have a big watch party. It'd be a fucking blast, but I get why they may not. It is a big moneymaker for Disney at this point. Why wait? But man, I don't know. The further we get into this, like 8 weeks from now, obviously F9 is not till next year. Bond's not till the fall, but there's no tentative date on Black Widow anymore. I think, I don't know. Yeah, we last another month and a half. Like they may think about it.
Well, I think Black Widow's going next year or whenever. I think there's a certain range of, production value or money sunk into a movie where the companies at this point, when they're going over their financials, feel like it's probably the best decision to just punt on it, putting it out into theaters. And not, you know, completely crowding the release schedule when these things do open back up again. But then you have to wonder, like, I don't know if there's going to be like a definitive date. It's not like there's going to be a ribbon cutting ceremony for when things open up again, right? It's going to be kind of like an incremental rollout where, you know, saying if you're in certain groups, you're probably okay. Like if you don't show, when testing's available, if you don't show signs or haven't had it, you're probably okay. And there's going to be another population that are still going to need to be in containment. So it's not like there's, even when it does come back online, I don't think the general audience is going to be there in 2020, which makes sense for some of these. The Hunt, like, completely makes sense, you know. Mm-hmm. Like probably wasn't going to do that great in theaters anyway. Just put it online. It's fine. $30 million. Fine. Fuck it. Like what's $30 million now that our losses are up in the billions?
Yeah, I think for a movie like The Hunt or a movie even like Bloodshot, that makes sense for them to go to streaming because they can almost make it, almost makes it, adds to their appeal. Like initially, I don't know if that many people would go to the theaters for movies like that, but now there is more appeal because they have that added almost gimmick, if you want to call it that. But for a movie though, like Black Widow, I think, I don't know how much this ties into it, but there is obviously the film has tie-ins to a franchise and a timeline within the MCU because it takes place in the past, and like I don't think it's that critical as to how it's going to tie into like the timeline of the MCU. So I think it's kind of evergreen content that you can push back. But that's the only thing I was curious about is like what its tie-ins are for the MCU and like time and like timeline wise, if it's going to fuck up anything. Like if there's, they're going to mention something during the movie Black Widow that is like critical to like a movie that's supposed to come out after it. You know what I mean? Like maybe Taskmaster reappears in whatever movie is scheduled to come out after Black Widow.
It would be Eternals, but I don't. Black Widow will be the first to come out of that. What is interesting though will be how this is impacted with the like Captain America Winter Soldier thing, because or Falcon Winter Soldier, because that is delayed. It sounds like that's close to ready to go, but the same with WandaVision. If that gets intertangled and messed around, I could see that definitely being an issue.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Or is this like how, this whole timeline now for all this shit is now like has to be moved around?
I think Falcon Winter Soldier may have a tie-in with Black Widow. That makes sense because it seems like a lot of these do have light tie-ins, like Loki, WandaVision with Doctor Strange. So yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah, it may end up being an issue. I mean, I would love if they did drop Black Widow there. It's tough because it's just about to come out. We're like a month away. But I get it. You know, Trill, you said it. These theaters, I think that was part of the quote of these stories. It's that these studios need major theater runs for these big budget movies, and they really can't risk it. It's just not worth it for them.
Well, and the theaters are going to need them, too, to bring people back in. Like, you know, when things do open up, like, people are going to want to see F9, and people are going to want to see Black Widow. They're not going to want to come in for Mr. Magorium 2. Magorium... Unleashed.
that's what we went with. Okay. there are some movies coming out on streaming, though. Birds of Prey, The Gentleman, home video release moved up. The Hunt, right into theaters, right from theaters straight into streaming. Same with Bloodshot. Trolls World Tour, Trill. Trolls World Tour dropping on streaming.
Ooh.
Early.
That's big. I mean, that's big.
20 bucks.
If you're a parent like I am, and your kid's going to sit through it and love it, I'm kind of excited for that one.
I saw a couple people complaining about 20 bucks. I was shocked it was only 20 bucks.
It seems too cheap.
That's a fucking steal. Man, it's because we live in an area where we pay a lot of money. But Trill, if you were to go out and buy Trolls World Tour for your daughter, I think you're going to probably spend 20 bucks anyway when it comes out.
No, for sure. I mean, the three of us going, you know, $15 a ticket,
mm-hmm. And we were obviously going to see it in IMAX 3D. me and Jeff, so we were going to pay $24 probably.
Yeah, we ended up getting a fucking steal. So everything is delayed for the foreseeable future. The whole thing's a bummer. It's not just a movie thing, but there will not be any new movies. Spiral got delayed. The new Saw movie, just not much. We'll see what comes out on streaming, though. And if something big comes out on streaming, we'll review it. And we'll see. Maybe people are going to ask us to review movies that do come out. But for now, we're going to stick to movies that have already been released and talk about older things. And we'll find some fun games and even better ways to review them. Westworld. Trill, did you watch Westworld before we talk about it?
I've watched like half of the first episode, and I really like it.
We liked it a lot. So go to the YouTube page, our YouTube page, please. It's a big help, especially because – I'll tell a funny story for a second. So we recorded a Westworld recap on Monday. Ken Jack, myself, and John Feidelberg fights. He's been a guest on here plenty of times, folks. It was a great breakdown. We did a very quick recap of season 2 and everything you needed to know. We felt like if you needed to be caught up, that was the catch-up that you needed. It was very quick. No bullshit in the middle. We loved the recording, thought it was fantastic. 8 hours later, the recording didn't process. It was still in the cloud on Zoom. I was like, that's weird. This is not normal, right? Like, you expect it. So I sent some emails like, hey, can we maybe see where this is? And apparently their servers were delayed. It kind of makes sense. People working from home. I get that. Then I wake up the next morning. I wake up Tuesday morning, still not up. 24 hours later, still not up. We have to fucking redo the entire thing. And then I read an article late last night that apparently Zoomers, and a lot of kids are also taking classes through Zoom. Kids are like taking the Zoom as like this new fucking sensation with all this quarantine stuff. And they've just jammed the servers. And actually, 15 minutes ago, our cloud recording of our Westworld breakdown just processed from Monday. So we were able to get it up. It's on YouTube. You can watch our recap on YouTube. I thought we did a pretty good breakdown. Had some fun with it. We really enjoyed the episode. I was not a big fan of season 2. I forgot a lot of it. Lost my interest. I loved the first episode. I know, Kendrick, you agreed, and so did Fight. So
I liked how they pivoted outside the parks. They got it out of there, right? They're getting out of Hawkins.
Yeah. I think the main point I made during our view with Fights is just how, like, a lot of series, when they try to expand and expand and expand, like, that has, like, the tendency to sort of collapse within itself. But I really do enjoy the world building they did to kind of see, like, this futuristic world, because, you know, we really just, like, didn't have any idea what was going on outside of the world of Westworld, and now we get a little peek. It's cool. And you get the crime app, which is awesome.
Yeah, the crime app, baby. But they were down, though, 57% down from the first episode of season two, so you can tell they pissed people off. And then this is a quote from Screen Rant. Though the Westworld season three premiere underperformed, it outpaced the first episode of The Outsider by 24% and Watchmen by 13%. So still a lot of people did watch it. Some people say maybe the Democratic debate bit into it. I don't know about that. So
very big crossover.
Yeah, we'll see on Sunday. But I will say this. I say this very strongly because we had some people reply to our tweet teasing the episode and comments in the YouTube section and on the website. People were like, I didn't like season two. Give it a chance. I didn't like season two as well. I was regretting committing us to this. I don't regret it anymore. At least that's one episode in. There's nine left. I love the first episode. So I think give it a chance. Look, most everyone's got a lot of time to watch stuff right now. So definitely give it a chance. That's fun.
I think you'll at least enjoy the first episode. It might get like all go downhill after this, but I think it's a good opening episode.
Sure, we'll definitely like it. If you like the first half, you're definitely going to enjoy it by the end of the episode.
Yeah. I like the vibe, man. I like that they're doing something different, at least from the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I also did one of those things where I put on Altered Carbon while I was working, and then I looked up 4 hours later and I'd gone through the rest of the series.
Yep. I did that with Castlevania 2 days ago.
And I'm like, oh boy, I wasn't paying attention. So now I don't know where to go back, and I might not.
Yeah, you're not missing a ton. It's good, not great. Season one is better.
Have you reached a point yet where you're going to dive into something that you said you wouldn't stream? We teased it on the last pod. I'm not there yet, but I've thought about it.
Yeah, I'm going to do The Crown, like I said, but I had to get through Castlevania first, and then I started watching Westworld, and then I watched Zodiac last night. So, yeah, that's a great pre-bed movie, fellas. Let me tell you what, especially when you're already in a good place. But it was fine.
I the first scene in Zodiac is obviously a morbid murder scene. And the other movie we're going to do is Harold and Kumar. And as it started, I'm like, I kind of want to go back on this one. I was like, nah, we already told people to watch this. Got to go through it. But then I was happy I watched it because it's still an intriguing movie. But I agree.
I did a Castlevania trill. I watched the first three episodes. I like it a lot. Old Richard Armitage, such a smooth and sultry voice.
Yeah, it's great. It's insanely well written. Warren Ellis, and the animation's cool, but like it's like one of the few animated shows that I feel like it gets by on the dialogue, the strength of dialogue and the characters, which is weird. But what it really makes me want to do is it makes me want like a really good open world Castlevania game.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking too. Like, I never played any of the Castlevania games, which I only assume you did, but this made me want to play Skyrim immediately and do the vampire DLC,
especially since I love the Dracula shit. But I was watching Zodiac, and like, you know, you're mentally in a bad place right now when you're like, you know what, like, I wouldn't be that scared right now to go back to 1969 and live in San Francisco compared to like the current environment.
You're right.
I take those chances.
Just see what happens.
Yeah. It's one guy.
It's just one dude who might have been a liar too about half of it. We'll get into it. I had never realized that there are some divisive opinions on Zodiac. No one's saying it stinks, but just like a kind of back and forth on how good is this movie. So yeah, we'll review it in a minute. So that's Westworld. Two more stories. I don't have much to say about this, and then I got to get to a great story. West Side Story images revealed. Did you see those bad boys?
I did. Good. What do you think? What do you guys think?
It looks good.
Looks cool.
West Side Story, I think, is one of the first musicals I ever watched. My mom's a huge fan, and I think this is going to be maybe some of Spielberg's better recent work.
Gee, Officer Kropke,
don't you agree?
Don't you agree? They're modernizing it though, right? So it's don't you dare take the jewel pod from me.
If they did a millennial West Side Story, oh Lord, it'd be awful.
Officer Krupke's always out to get me. Just the other day, he stole my anime girl bathwater.
We've said it before. We've done Officer Krupke jokes in the show before, but the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where there is legitimately an Officer Krupke who's working at a Banana Republic when Larry accidentally wears pants outside of the Banana Republic during a fire drill that have like security tag. There's an officer named Krupke. It's a very good episode. Ben Affleck also makes a cameo in that episode. He's a patron in the Banana Republic. Very random.
Did you watch the John Hamm episode?
Very funny.
It's okay.
John Hamm's such a great comedic actor. Yes. It's insane.
This season got off to a bit of a rocky start. It wasn't rocky. I thought it was like, it was a little worrisome. It was like a little too much. You're like, whoa. Like the first episode was like 10 Curb episodes in one. It has hit a fucking stride. Very funny. It's very funny right now. That's Westworld. Wait, Westworld? West Side Story.
My God.
What?
I'm going to send this to the chat just to see if this is appropriate to talk about, but it...
No. What? We're not going to talk about that. No. That's a pass. Mm. No, I like that. Actually, that's kind of nice. Like, for us, it's weird, but... Okay. We're going to move on. We're talking about something really fucked up right now, too. So we'll move on. But you can leave that up to your imagination.
I might quote. No, I'm not going to.
I'm
not going to quote to you.
Bad news. All right. This comes from BroadwayWorld.com. Do you guys know what story I'm about to talk about? I didn't put it on the rundown.
Cats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cats is now available on digital and home release. So go spend the money, folks. It's a tweet. I desperately need a tell-all book about the making of Cats that could really help me get through this. Reply, @JackWaz. A VFX producer friend of a friend was hired in November to finish some of the 400 effect shots in Cats movie. His entire job was to remove the CGI buttholes that had been inserted a few months before, which means that somewhere out there exists a butthole cut of Cats. And then people were tweeting, #releasethebuttholecut.
That's the real movie, in my opinion.
I think getting all worked up over the Snyder cut, if you're going to do that, and if you care about movies, you now must get worked up over release the butthole cut.
Yeah, I mean, you know at least one person that signed on to do VFX on that as a furry that has that butthole cut. Like,
how realistic are the buttholes, though?
I don't think I ever had a cat growing up, so I don't really know. I can't really gauge how realistic they could look.
Are they real? I just have a hard time believing it. You know, that somebody would do that. They would do that. That somebody would take time animating buttholes.
Like, what do they mean by animating? Do they just have buttholes? Or are they like moving parts buttholes?
Well, or is it the spandex suit they're wearing before they CGI on? That's just going up too far or whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't get the logistics of that at all.
Yeah, no, I don't really understand it either, but I do want to see the butthole cut and just see how much different it is than the cut we got.
If not the butthole cut, then just a screen grab from the butthole cut.
I mean, somebody has that footage somewhere. It's tough. They didn't erase all the copies. There's one out there.
Someone's home, not working on their movies because they're isolated, social distancing. Go pull up that hard drive you have, screenshot it. Lacey, the people need a laugh right now.
Lacey Rugged Drive with the butthole cut.
Yeah. Oh, man, where is that Lacey Rugged Drive?
All right. Anything else in news? I don't think so. You want to talk about Zodiac?
Let's talk about Zodiac.
Let's talk about Zodiac. Zodiac was released in 2007. In the late 1960s and 1970s, fear grips the city of San Francisco as a serial killer called Zodiac stalks its residents. True story. I mean, if you didn't know, just for the sake of you didn't know. Investigators, played by Mark Ruffalo, Anthony Edwards, and reporters, played by Jake Gyllenhaal and Robert Downey Jr. Super Marvel movie, by the way. A lot of Marvel people in this. Became obsessed with learning the killer's identity and bringing him to justice. Meanwhile, Zodiac claims victim after victim and taunts the authorities with cryptic messages, ciphers, and menacing phone calls. David Fincher directed this thing. David Fincher's done, obviously, many movies that people absolutely fucking love. He did Alien 3, but he also did Fight Club. he did Zodiac, Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Social Network, Gone Girl, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Obviously did House of Cards, Mindhunter, which people absolutely fucking love. House of Cards was good for a while. I think it's
first two or three seasons.
That America Works season was one of the worst things ever.
Mm.
Where it went from like really interesting, like crime mystery to like this really boring policy plan. It was so boring.
This Zodiac feels like Mindhunter swirling in the womb.
Yes, I agree with
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Very similar vibes.
Yeah.
In retrospect, anyway.
Zodiac. Let's get back to the old synopsis here. Again, stars some pretty big fucking names. Mark Ruffalo, Robert Downey Jr., Jake Gyllenhaal. Also stars Brian Cox, a.k.a. Logan Roy.
From the McDonald's commercial? Did he ever confirm that he was in that McDonald's commercial?
Yeah, it is him. It is him. Also, Jimmy Simpson in a small role as well.
He's good in everything. That he makes everything he's in better.
That messed me up when they switched actors, though.
Because that actor looked similar though to the actor they had as the kid. It was too long of an interval between their appearances.
But the problem is Jimmy Simpson is Jimmy Simpson. He's like one of those guys. If you know him, like you can't switch actors. It has to be Jimmy Simpson.
He plays Ed Harris and Jimmy Simpson in Westworld.
That's true.
And they look wild.
God damn it!
And they look wildly different.
Oh, fucking owned. Oh,
I think we were just talking about my dude.
Oh, God. Fuck.
But I love Simpson so much, man. Literally everything I've ever seen him in, he's made whatever it is better. In comedy roles, like McPoyle in It's Always Sunny is one of the funniest characters ever. And then he's like serious as shit in Westworld, and he's amazing in that too. He's just great.
Where do we stand on Zodiac? Let's hear the scores. I'll start with you, Trill. What would you give Zodiac out of 100?
I give it an 85. I think Zodiac is.
Oh, you gave it two?
That's my exact score. Yeah.
Okay. So Zodiac is very solid. I think it would have the potential to be above 90 and maybe even mid 90s if it were just a little bit tighter and I'm not saying shorter, but it just felt like there's a lot of talking in this movie, right? Like, and that's why I say it's like Mindhunter. It's I don't know how to describe it, right? Where most movies are a lot of talking, right? But like in terms of the way it's described, like a crime drama, mystery thriller, in terms you think about a thriller, there's a lot of like moments of tension and sort of like suspense in a thriller. And the suspense, I think, like the most of it, which is like a build up to the basement scene, right? And there's some other moments here or there, but I thought that there were parts that maybe they could have condensed a little bit more to make it run maybe like closer to 2 hours rather than 2 hours and 30.
The more I think about this, I think I kind of agree with that. I think that's a good take because I think that like, I'm just trying to compare this now to Mindhunter. I think that this movie needed more time. Because I think maybe my only problem with it, and just to reiterate, I gave it an 85 as well. I think my problem with it is they do jump around time a lot, which is necessary just because that's the length of the Zodiac investigation. But I think that's maybe the only weakness for me is the constant shifting around of the setting and the time and all that. So I think it would have had done better if this was like a series, I think it could have been amazing. But I just think there's a lot of information crammed into a short period of time.
There is. There's a lot of names too. This is a big rabbit hole movie, by the way. If you don't know anything about the Zodiac Killer, this is a movie where you are probably going to pull up a separate window or on your phone Wikipedia because you just want to be like, is that really how it happened? You don't want to follow along. Even then, I know about this story pretty well because I've done that before. I got lost for like 2 seconds at the end with the Jimmy Simpson character again.
Yes,
because it's a names thing for me. Like, right. This is one of those movies where if you just get – you lose track for 2 seconds, you're missing the names. I originally gave this – when I saw this movie in 84, I went back in my sheet, and I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to stick with it, which is funny. We're all three the same thing. I thought there might be a difference today. I love David Fincher's work. I really like, obviously, Gone Girl. I like The Social Network. I think his style is very recognizable in a good way. It's a Fincher movie. It sounds and looks like a Fincher movie. Whether it be the passage of time using sped up shots, the passage of time with the way people talk about things and say things. Like, I love the birthday thing. When Mark Ruffalo said happy birthday to his partner, and you hit it two times in the movie, so you know that's the passage of time. It's been a year, even though in the movie it wasn't that far separated, the scene wise. I think the way he crafts his movies are fantastic. This just isn't my favorite of his, and I think it's because, for me, it loses a little bit of its steam in some sections pacing-wise. And I don't want to say it's too long, but I think the way it's structured, and I don't have it – I hate saying this. I don't have a great answer of how to do it differently, but there's a few things that just kind of – it feels like a bit of a bump in it, and it slows down what at times is a movie that really hits some marks and hits a beat and is rather exhilarating. But it's a true crime movie. So, I mean, you also can't totally expect it to be fast-paced and nonstop, but I do think the way it's structured, it does have a few slow points that feel off and take me a little out of it emotionally. But it's still very good, but just not up to par with his best, because his best work for me is, I mean, they're just near-perfect movies. Gone Girl and Social Network are unbelievable movies for me. They're in the top 1% of everything I've seen. So,
well, I did like it because it was they were able, I think, to use the actors to their advantage, because Gyllenhaal is playing a very Gyllenhaalian character, and Downey Jr. was playing the same character Robert Downey Jr. typically plays, right? But they're written in such a way that it still was very believable for them, and it didn't feel like super forced in, you know, like at the start where Robert Downey Jr.'s character was doing a little light sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you're like, okay, like it makes sense that a character played by Robert Downey Jr. would do that back in the late 60s.
Yeah. I think one thing he did really well in this is kind of shifting the focus between all the characters. Like, I think Graysmith is obviously like the focal character in this, but they do shift focus between him and Toski and Paul Avery and all them. And so, like, I think he did a really good job of kind of making that transition between the focal point very seamless. And I don't think that is necessarily as easy as a task as like he made it look. So, you know, props to him for that, because I think made it better than it would have been.
Some people actually, and I'll read a little excerpt here. Some people didn't love the way Fincher did the movie. I'll read this just from the blurb from Wikipedia. I think this is, if you know the movie, this is a kind of a well-known thing now. Some of the cast was not happy with Fincher's exacting ways and perfectionism. Some scenes required upward of 70 takes. Gyllenhaal was frustrated by the director's methods and commented in an interview, "You get a take, 5 takes, 10 takes, some places 90 takes," which is nuts when you think about it. I didn't even think 90 fucking times, especially with Gyllenhaal, who was kind of frantic throughout the movie. But there's a stopping point, or the point at which you go, that's what we have to work with. We would reshoot things, so there came to a point where I would say, well, what do I do? Where's the risk? Downey said, I just decided, aside from several times, I wanted to garrote him that I was going to give him what he wanted. I think I'm a perfect person to work for him because I understand gulags. Which I know talks very funny.
Understand what?
Ruffalo backed him up, though. Ruffalo said, the way I see it is, you enter into someone else's world as an actor. You can put your expectations aside and have an experience that's new and pushes and changes you, or hold on to what you think it should be and have a stubborn, immovable journey that's filled with disappointment and anger. Which, they're all three very different characters in this movie, and they all act in very different ways. Like, Downey's a more kind of out there. I don't know what the best way to do it. He's more
Downey.
He's a Robert Downey.
Charismatic.
Charismatic, colorful. Ruffalo, kind of more the straight man. He's the cop. He's like an old, like, Like I think of the word, like, you're not a beatnik, like that kind of cop, you know, from the 60s, where Gyllenhaal is the more, I think, relatable guy. You know, he's
the kid.
He's the kid. So three different experiences there for, I assume, many different reasons because of the type of characters that they played. But it's interesting going in and thinking about that.
That's funny because I personally, look, I've never directed a movie. And I'm never going to be in a movie, but 90 takes of something seems
like shit.
Excessive.
I mean, that seems torturous. And it's almost like unfair because, you know, the actor's getting paid a lot of money. But at some point, you got to wonder if directors are so good where they can even differentiate between it. But then you have to think, like, well, they know, right? Like, it's their discretion. When they see something when they like, they go with it. And so it's like when who do you talk to about method acting? The person you interviewed?
Oh, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, some people swear by method acting and some people completely think it's bullshit. And I think there's a lot of directors that are very laissez-faire or hands-off with the way they do it and they get good results. And I think there are other directors who are just nightmarish but get good results too. I think all of it just depends on are the actors willing to come back and work with you. And so 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Well, yeah. No, go ahead, Ken. Jack.
No, I was just gonna say, I mean, that's someone with Fincher where, like, when you sign up for it, you know what you're getting into, and obviously he has, like, proven results. So I think you've as long as you know what you're doing going into it, it's you can't really expect anything otherwise, right? You can't go into Fincher expecting him to direct like Spielberg or something like that.
Yeah. And I think with the characters too, now that I think about it, it's more the fact that, so Kendrick, I guess you liked the way it was structured, but for me, I think there were moments where I felt like we had been missing the characters for almost too long. I don't know. Like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I was like, well, wait a second. Are we just completely done with that character?
So I didn't necessarily like the way it was structured. I think he did a really good job doing it with that sort of script, if that makes sense. Like, with what he was given, he did a really, really good job of making sure that narrative switch didn't trip us up too much as an audience.
Yeah, I think that was just my only real complaint, I think. I was just like, I wish it was a little more even, which it can't totally be because obviously Downey's character kind of dips off into like off screen. He's just not in the story for obvious reasons due to his character. But that was my like, I don't know. Another thing about this with Fincher, I will say this. There's something about Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross when they do the music for Fincher movies that bring him to another level. They did the music for Social Network and Gone Girl. Didn't do it here. I thought the music was good here. Don't get me wrong. But, man, they elevate the way his movies look, like that crisp look, like the color in his movies. It's just, again, it's recognizable, and I love looking at it. I always wish he's paired up with Trent Reznor. So that's my one wish. It's my only ask. He hasn't done a movie in a while. He's supposed to do one this year called Mank. It's a biographical drama film about a screenwriter who did who was a part of and his battles with Orson Welles over Citizen Kane. Mm. That's going to have Gary Oldman, Amanda Seyfried, Lily Collins, and Trent Reznor is actually doing the music there. Oh, it's actually I didn't know it was a Netflix movie. So that may come out whenever. How about performing? No, go ahead, Trill.
No, I just wanted to know, like, where do you guys stand on the Zodiac Killer? I'm a guest.
Bad guy.
I'm not a good dude.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Well, that's what we'll end. We'll end with our thoughts on, like, the story itself. Gyllenhaal, though, because I think this Gyllenhaal is obviously the centerpiece. We're going to do a box office game for Jake Gyllenhaal. You can probably guess the number one highest grossing movie Jake Gyllenhaal's been in, but the rest might be, I think it'll be maybe a bit of a test. Where do you put this up with Jake Gyllenhaal performances?
Hold on. I got to get his filmography. I can look at his filmography.
You can.
You can look at his filmography.
The same thing when we get to the results. I don't think it's like a top five performance for him but that's not a discredit him at all. Like, he's just an amazing actor. I think he's had other performances that knock out of the park way more. Like, this is better than like 90% of actors' performances ever. But I just don't think, comparing it to a lot of his other roles, it's as standout for me.
Yeah, I know. I think we talked about it before. I think we think Nightcrawler for the most part is probably his strongest role. Because of, like, I don't know, just kind of this character. It was played down the middle, I think, for effect, because he had, was that Mark Ruffalo's character? Because I felt like I was supposed to be Gyllenhaal's character in this movie. Because he was like he was younger, you know, he got kicked out of the meeting. He was like the new guy, got wrapped up in the mystery and whatever. And I think it was fine, but like it definitely, you know, it's better than Bubble Boy. And that's all I'm going to say on it. That's the problem with the Gyllenhaal filmography, is because you have him in Bubble Boy, and then you have him in Jiminy Glick and La La Wood. And you got to put it above that, right, fellas? But then where do you put it against something like, you know, Nightcrawler? And then I like Brokeback Mountain, but I thought Heath Ledger was above and beyond Gyllenhaal in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Hard agree there.
Nightcrawler, End of Watch is really good. He's even good in Stronger, a movie that didn't get a ton of love, the Boston Marathon one. I thought Southpaw, he was good. I mean, I'm a bit of a stan for old Jake Gyllenhaal. I like almost everything he said. I mean, he was fucking great in Spider-Man too. He was a fantastic Unreal. Marvel villain. Prince of Persia, we won't talk about Prince of Persia. I think that the scene that shows why this is one of his better ones, I will put this up here with some of his best. I think the basement scene is probably the best scene in the movie.
Yes.
A scene that I don't still fully understand. Is that weird?
I don't get it. Why that guy was acting that creepy either. It doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know. That was the part where the movie felt like Silence of the Lambs to me, just because it's the only other thriller I have ever watched in my life. But it was like when I first saw it, you didn't know. I mean, that's the thing about these historical movies, though, is like sometimes you know the outcome by just knowing the history of it. But because I didn't know too much about the story, I was like, dude, is Gyllenhaal about to get like murdered down here? And then the dude is creepy, but he kind of, it had that tension point that the like Clarice going in to like the night vision Buffalo Bill scene thing. Maybe not as hair raising, but
I still definitely don't get it. Like the guy seemingly understood he was coming off as very creepy and yet did nothing to make that situation any better for Jake Gyllenhaal.
What was the character's name again in that scene? I want to pull this up. I want to see if there's reasoning, because I also want to read a review that
it was something kinda, Hughes
that kind of connects to that.
I almost said Phil Hughes. It's definitely not Phil Hughes.
It's Phil Hughes. No, it's not the pitcher. Just watch the movie.
Bob Vaughn.
Bob Vaughn. Okay. Yeah. Why does? So here's the review I want to read. This is the review of Zodiac. It says, if Fincher wasn't so adamant that his film was a total factual representation of the case, Zodiac would be a far better piece of fictionalized history. I think that's a very interesting review. Because what do you think about maybe him making this a little more fictionalized? Because obviously, like, The Social Network is an account that is disputed by some people as well, and he cuts some corners on that.
I think crime movies, there's a certain standard we hold them to where we almost don't want them to take liberties with it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. We want to be as true to it as whatever, because I think especially with crime movies, almost over any other genre, like, we go into the Wikipedia rabbit hole and make sure everything that happened is correct. So I do agree with that.
I don't know why that is. I think it's because, you know, something like The Social Network, you'll never really know the full details around the conversations that happened. But crime stuff is backed up by, or like big crime events are backed up by court records and police records and testimony and people writing about it and shit like that. That almost, the truth almost fills in the gaps in your head where there would be space for the fictionalized account of it.
So there's some theories about that scene. It just kind of ties into what you're saying, and I kind of like it. People are saying that scene isn't as creepy as you think it is. It's more the fact that you are trained to have the viewpoint from Grace Smith's character, who's finding everything. He's seeing the Zodiac everywhere.
The guy's acting really creepy. I mean, we're not going crazy.
The guy is creepy. No, I agree. But when it comes down to it, like, he's really just asking questions. He's being a bit of a weirdo. But you're also, you have a heightened sense of paranoia for the character, right? Even if he's being, like, he's definitely being creepy, but he has a more high, like, everything he sees, he's paranoid because he's down this rabbit hole. He's getting phone calls. So I get a little more of that when it's explained that way. I mean,
the guy, there's clearly someone else in the house, and he's like, well, there's no one else. You can go and check if you want. And, like, he's asking him direct questions like, yeah, do you live with anyone? And he's like, oh, here's the tape, like, ignoring him and shit. Like, he was being very creepy. That I don't agree with that at all.
It's time for murder.
What? No, I would. He's like fucking Mark Wahlberg in
Murder, She Wrote. Are you a fan?
I just happened to talk about it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, very good movie. But, like, Jeff, like, what's, like, some of the more disputed factual stuff? Like, fill us in on the Zodiac legend and
okay, well, let's go with fact or fiction, Zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look it up. Pull up some movie facts too while you're at it.
What was the name of the Jimmy Simpson character? It was like Mike Magoo or something.
Simmy Jimson.
Simmy Jimson.
It was Mike Magoo. It was like Mike Magoo or Magoo. But now I can only hear Magoo in my head.
Mr. Magoo. I didn't see the killer.
Did suspect Arthur Lee Allen really wear a watch? So, okay, we'll read fact versus fiction, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on this. Did suspect Arthur Lee Allen really wear a watch with the Zodiac symbol on it? Yes, that is true. He actually did do that. Graysmith commented on this in an interview.
That's enough evidence for me right there.
That would be enough.
Yeah, if I was on the jury, I'd be like, yep.
Done.
I'm an idiot.
I mean, yeah, that's very clearly it. To use a symbol, to wear the watch, and to be at the crime scene and to know the victims, he would have to be the Zodiac. That's what Graysmith actually said. What prompted Robert Graysmith to begin working on a Zodiac book? He said, I saw it going into obscurity, and I thought, well, wait a minute. Nobody is sharing all the different jurisdictions, all this information. They're not going to tell each other, even within departments. Took 10 years, but he put it all together. Did writing the Zodiac book really cost Robert Graysmith his marriage? Yes. Did. His wife did leave him.
Damn shame.
Yeah.
For the Zodiac killer, no less.
In real life, the Zodiac book took Robert 10 years to complete, and it cost him his marriage. When asked if he regrets his obsession with the Zodiac killer, Graysmith says, it affected my life in one bad way because I got divorced, but on the other hand, I have the greatest kids. As far as the personal relationship, that was not good. Zodiac was in number one. That just took over. That's kind of sad. It's kind of a sad realization.
Yeah, but at least they made his divorce papers, like, in a crypto. He had some fun there.
Yeah,
that would actually be hilarious.
I'll let you keep a little more than I wanted, but you have to decipher this code first. What circumstantial evidence did Graysmith have against Arthur Lee Miller in an MSNBC? And by the way, this is from chasingthefrog.com. In an interview with MSNBC, Graysmith responded to criticism that he focused too much on Allen and not enough of the evidence. Well, if the killer leaves a footprint and it's a Wingwalker shoe that they only made 169,000 pairs and they were only sold on naval stations and his father's naval commander, it's a size 10 shoe. You can only get it if you're a dependent or an enlisted person, if he works across the street from the first victim. And he goes on and on. I mean, look, Graysmith, we're with you here. Right? Like, tease to our final conclusion. We're with him that it's Miller, right? That it's Arthur Lee Miller.
It has to be.
Allen.
It just looks scary. Isn't
Arthur,
he in
Arthur Miller was a playwright.
Arthur Lee something, right? Because he went by Lee. Isn't that same guy Mindhunters as a serial killer? I believe.
He might be. He also plays one of the McDonald's brothers in The Founder and plenty of other things. He's in a lot
Carol,
of
Carol something.
I'm going to Google Carol actor and see what shows up.
Did the two Zodiac survivors want the movie to be made? Michael Magoo said, expressed strong reservations about viewing director David Fincher's Zodiac movie. Why would I want to see that? I thought he was in movie. So one of them was in the movie. I don't want to remember that time anymore. Okay, maybe not. Maybe it was somebody else was in it. Brian Hartnell was also not in favor of the movie being made. Hartnell changed his mind a little after meeting the director, and I believe he's like has a cameo in the movie. That was the guy who was stabbed by the lake. did a woman narrowly escape the Zodiac by jumping out of his car while holding her baby? I know that has been disputed. Over the years, her account of her experience on this evening of Sunday, March 1970 has varied. I know people go back and forth on that. And they kind of go back and forth on it in the movie too, right? Like there's a little question about it and who it really is. Did the Zodiac really call Melvin Belly on a KGO TV talk show? That is Brian Cox. Brian Cox is a fucking legend, by the way. Just dominates every role he's in, even the McDonald's commercial. That really happened. He called in. Did a police officer really spot the Zodiac killer after the taxicab murder? Yes. Did the Zodiac murderer really mail a piece of the taxi driver's shirt to the San Francisco Chronicle? Yes. Did the killer really threaten to kill school children? Yes. I mean, it's all yes. And that was that, like, this is a very, like, true to form movie. And they don't even really make a full, they don't really make a full on, conclusion at the end, but they're pretty, they pretty much let you know.
Do you want some trivias?
Trivia.
Yeah. Some trivia.
Yeah. The Zodiac case is reopened after the release of the film. It's a really bad trivia fact. The shooting script was 200 pages long. To prevent any problems with the length that such a long script might cause, director David Fincher decided to ask his cast members to speak faster. The only real comment that Robert Graysmith said about the finished screenplay was, "God, now I see why my wife divorced me."
My wife left me.
The murder victim's costumes were meticulously recreated from forensic evidence that was lent to the production. What? They were? Was it like actual evidence?
That's kind of creepy.
That is. It's very creepy.
Trees had to be helicoptered into the Lake Berryessa location as the area changed substantially since 1969, and David Fincher wanted it to resemble the murder site as closely as possible. See, that's the kind of commitment to filmmaking that is just not really necessary, right?
Yeah.
Just find a different location. You're the only one who knows.
This really happened. The only one. The basement thing really happened too, by the way.
The creepy basement moment?
Yeah. This is all true. Really happened to Graysmith, even the footsteps. Some investigators who have researched the case believe that this man and Rick Marshall may have been working together. Fucking creepy. Creepy ass shit. I don't know. I like it. I like it a lot, but I think, for me, the structure was different between it being good and great, and maybe the music too. I like the music, but I do love the way he shows the passage of time. I think it's fantastic. He does it in like a quick montage. He's also Network. This one, he shows that what's that famous building in San Francisco called? What's that like?
The Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, no, that's it.
The one that's a spire.
Yeah,
the pier. It's like a pier. It's something pyramid. It's probably like a bank name pyramid.
It's the Transamerica pyramid.
Transamerica is a bank, right?
Yeah, I think it's Transamerica pyramid.
Like every distinctive building is named after a bank for the most part. So
that's true.
It's just something bank pyramid, bank tower.
Yep. All right. Final thoughts. We think he did it.
Yeah, I mean the movie builds around the point that he is the one who did it. So
the watch was enough for me.
I mean, we were conditioned throughout the movie to believe that he is the killer by the end of it, and the guy's dead. So it's, I don't think it's slander to say he might have, or it is.
The only thing though is like the DNA stuff, right? Mentions it at the end of this movie, and I haven't really followed up on it. But they ran the Alan David Allen Co., whatever his name was, they ran his DNA and it didn't match the Zodiac stuff. But how many years? I don't know. I'm not a DNA guy. I watched Jurassic Park once. I don't know if that stuff is like 100% accurate. I think there are probably a lot of people who have been fucked by DNA evidence. So who knows?
It's true. Or maybe it's wrong. Who knows?
Good movie, though.
Very fun movie. No, fun's not the right word. Very good.
Very enjoyable. It's interesting watching it because, like, even movies like Jarhead and other things where it's like, you know, not like Gyllenhaal was a kid, but you're still like have a 27, 28 year old Gyllenhaal. You still have a pre Iron Man, post recovery Robert Downey Jr., and you have a pretty much like pre mainstream fame Ruffalo in it. it's kind of a cool inflection point in their career.
Did Ruffalo sound weird to you at times? And I guess it was his voice, but it sounded like he just had a different pitched voice.
I think he was trying to do an accent.
Maybe he was.
It was auto-tuned.
Also, they kind of gloss over the fact that he sent in those letters, the fake Zodiac letters.
Well, he sent in – well, because he got cleared of sending in the actual one.
Yeah, but he did send in fake ones.
Yeah, he did kind of get off the hook there.
And like, yeah, how'd they gloss over that in the movie? They're just like, yeah, he thought it'd be a funny prank.
Essentially, yes. They kind of just let it go. Yeah.
Why would they even recast Jimmy Simpson? Just shave him and have him play the younger guy. I'm looking at the pictures you just sent me. I'm getting pissed.
They look so similar.
Just fucking get the same actor. Put a beard on one or shave the beard on the other.
That's the weird part is that Jimmy Simpson is young enough to have played both those ages.
I texted you guys earlier that I was at CVS buying food because that's where I shop for my family now. And the woman at the checkout said, has anyone ever told you you look like Vincent Van Gogh? And at first I was like, oh, cool. Like Vincent Van Gogh is famous. And then I left the store and I looked at a picture of Vincent Van Gogh. I'm like, damn, that MF or ugly AF.
Like the, what do you call, actually, if I remember correctly, he has a very full beard and hair.
No, I think he has the Landon Donovan landing strip though, I think. Like the Widow's Peak landing strip.
I mean, I'm looking at a self-portrait of Vincent Van Gogh right now, and I'll just say you don't look like him.
She said that, and I was like, I bet I have more ears than he does.
It's true.
She said, sir, that'll be $36.99.
And you get, here's one long receipt for your trouble. Oh, man, I actually went to CVS recently and used my mom's store card number, and I got all of her coupons. Thing was literally like 8 feet long. Get it? Like, not even joking though, it was.
Hey guys, what if run low on toilet paper but you have CVS receipt?
Box office game? Yeah, let's do box office game. All right, Jake Gyllenhaal. You actually, the proper pronunciation of his name is like Gyllenhaal or something.
Some
like
Swedish
that.
Shit, right?
He does it on Conan. He talks about it. It's kind of a funny clip. All right, what are his top five highest grossing movies of all time?
I gotta go with filmography.
Number one, Spider-Man.
This comes out to four, yes, because number one is Spider-Man. I'm not even gonna. Yes, that's your guess. So you got to get the next four, and I don't know how easy that will be.
It's probably kind of tough. Let's see. I'm gonna look through the old filmography here.
I'll give you a freebie too.
Like four misses.
No, I'll give you one that is definitely not in the top five.
Okay.
The Sisters Brothers.
Good movie though.
Thank you.
I'd say
$13 million.
I'd say Jarhead's up there, true.
Okay, let's do Jarhead.
Your answer is Jarhead for the first guess?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
10, 11, 12. It comes in at number 12.
Jesus, really?
Could guess, yep. Dumbass.
Prince of Persia, okay. Sands of Time.
Yes, that was the alpha. That was the Chad pick.
Yeah, the Chad pick would be right. So you have two correct of the five, and you have... two guesses left.
I want to say Southpaw, but I don't know. I don't know.
What do we do? What did we review last week?
For Netflix review or?
Indiana Jones 4. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Sunday?
Yeah, okay. All right. You guys are 20-5 all time, so.
I can't believe Jarhead is that low. Maybe Brokeback Mountain? Probably not.
I want to say Source Code, but that's tough, right?
I don't know about that. I've seen October Skies so many times, but only on a TV card.
Oh, The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, yep. Roland Emmerich for sure.
Day After Tomorrow is number two. So you have the top three. You have Spider-Man Far From Home, The Day After Tomorrow, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, and you have two more guesses left.
I do think Brokeback Mountain made a lot of
the last two you came in out of nowhere at the end and got them. So I'm going to go out on the limb again and say I don't think you're going to get this.
Okay, let's do Brokeback Mountain.
Sure.
What do you think, Kenji? Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain comes in at number 6. It misses by $1 million.
Oh, no.
Wow.
$1 million?
You have two left, and you only have one strike left.
Accidental Love. Oh, man. It's definitely not that.
I swear to God,
if Brothers is on, I'm going to fucking be mad, man.
I don't think it'd be Brothers, would it?
No.
I don't remember people like lining up to go see that, but then again,
you said October Sky. Did we guess that?
No. Do you think that made like a ton of money? I only remember ever watching it on video on demand or
Big time class movie, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Big time TV cart movie. Good Girl Highway, Moonlight Mile. This is actually really hard. I thought it'd be a little bit easier. Proof? No.
Zodiac?
Oh, wait, yeah, let's not do that again. Let's not do this bullshit again. It's probably fucking Zodiac.
I don't know, though.
You only have one guess left. Well, you have to be right on your last two guesses.
Fuck. This is our mistake we made that last time.
Yeah, fuck. I know. I don't want to fuck up, dude. That's the only reason I thought of that.
But maybe Prisoners.
Prisoners. What was Prisoners about again?
It was him and Hugh Jackman. Shit, who else is in that?
We're prisoners, mate.
That's actually, you said that.
Bubble Boy?
No, I doubt it.
Actually, does City Slickers count?
He was in City Slickers.
It's City Slickers. Movie, I believe. City Slickers is one.
You're guessing City Slickers.
I'm guessing City Slickers.
You have to be correct.
Don't you think City Slickers is the best pick because that movie was huge? I saw that movie as a kid. I'm not saying anything. No, my mom specifically wanted to go take me to see City Slickers.
I was not born yet. I was -2, so I don't have the theater experience to lend you here.
Your guess is City Slickers?
Yeah, I'm making a BDE move here.
City Slickers comes in at number 5. Number 5 Hans Gruber movie. It makes the list. You have one left.
Oh,
for all the marbles. What a guess.
I think that's it. Oh, fuck.
I'm still not sure about Prisoners now.
Oh, boy.
Some fucking source code.
What could it be, man? What's in the box?
I just keep scrolling up and down, and I mean...
What's in the box?
Stronger was good, but I don't think that made money.
Stronger?
Wildlife definitely made no money. That was the one where they're on the space station. What's his? I think Ryan Reynolds is in it.
Demolition? I don't know, dude. I think we should just guess. I think we should guess either Southpaw or End of Watch or Prisoners.
I mean, Southpaw.
Or Source Code. It's either Source Code, End of Watch, Prisoners, or Southpaw to really narrow it down.
You have four movies to pick from.
I mean, the only one I would go with Prisoners out of that bunch.
Okay, let's try Prisoners.
Is that your guess?
Yes.
Prisoners is like number 16 or 17, not even close.
What?
Actually, none of the four movies you just said are in the top 5. Number 4, 2015 movie Everest.
Oh, wow. Would not have guessed that.
Everest. Yeah, that was a very tough one. I didn't think Gyllenhaal would be that hard.
I honestly saw the thing when I was scrolling over it, and I didn't even consider it.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it once.
I didn't even consider it. Big idiot. I mean, here.
Goddamn, Prisoners did make money, too. Shit, it was $122 million.
He has, like, this group of, like, 100 mil to 200 mil of, like, 15 movies.
Damn. Yeah, I was never even going to consider Everest at any point. Did that guy clean up abroad or something? That was a big-ass budget. Shit, $55 million for a mountain climbing movie?
Of Downey's movies, how many? Let's see. The first movie, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Number 10 is, Sherlock Holmes. Game of Shadows. That's how far it goes down the Downey list to get out of Marvel.
Everest only made $40 million in North America. The rest
that's crazy.
The rest is abroad. That's
so random.
Nuts.
The fuck?
Oh, man.
Tough loss.
I was certain it was one of those four movies.
Tough loss. Somehow, some way, all of your losses are next to each other. When you look at the ranking of our movies, Zodiac, 40-Year-Old Virgin, And then Ocean's 12, Rat Race National Treasure, all in a row. Still, you guys are 20-6 doing this game, so.
We're pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty decent.
Not bad.
Not bad, boss. All right, True, you have a special segment this week?
Yeah, it's called Blight at the Museum. It's a challenge between Ken Jack and I to come up with the worst fourth movie in the Night at the Museum franchise that we can think of. And so I wrote a little treatment, a little synopsis for the movie. So when I'm in the elevator with Roland Emmerich, pitching him on the fourth one, this is kind of what I'd give him. You guys want me to start?
Yeah, you go first. So you're going to give a plot and then the four.
It's all intertwined into mine, right? So okay. I'll let you know. Okay. So I got, there's some major players that I think would be just horrible people to spend a night in a museum with. Not horrible in the sense of like, you know, like murderers, but just like, you know, not Teddy Roosevelt, right? All right. So Lane Daly has been laid off from his teaching job and finds himself in a familiar place, fellas. What's that place?
What's the place?
Museum.
It's the museum, Jeff. Okay. That's right. Never expecting to work another night shift as a security guard again, he kicks his feet back, preparing for another uneventful round at the historic National Museum of Indiana History and Great Hoosiers, located in beautiful downtown Terre Haute, Indiana. Suddenly, he hears a voice from his desk drawer. He reluctantly opens the drawer, revealing a tiny, living and breathing John Cougar Mellencamp, a younger one played by Jesse Eisenberg. Cougar is worried. He mentions that a pair of diabolical Hoosiers have also awoken and hidden the museum's prized possession somewhere in the facility. So this is where I changed it. There's no longer a pair of diabolical Hoosiers. Originally, it was supposed to be Jared Fogle and Michael Jackson. I decided that was too dark.
Smart move.
Yeah, I got rid of that one. So just don't think about that one again. Without any time to explain, Cougar rushes Larry to look for clues in the exhibit commemorating the greatest battle in Hoosier history. You guys know what that battle is?
No.
No.
The Malice at the Palace. Inside, they find tiny Larry Bird, played by Brian Posehn, who explains that the prized possession was the original recipe for St. Elmo's Steakhouse cocktail sauce. He warns that if it is copied and duplicated somewhere, Chris Collinsworth will not have its requisite 15 seconds of seasonal airtime talking about the cocktail sauce when Sunday Night Football visits Indianapolis.
I guess I'm imagining Brian Posehn as Larry Bird now.
Yep.
I'm on the sofa.
Shocked, Larry, the Ben Stiller Larry, not Larry Bird, comes to a realization. They arrive at the Jim Davis exhibit in the museum to find tiny Jim Davis, played by Larry Bird, and says that Garfield is the only one craven enough to steal that goddamn recipe. Jim Davis nervously denies this until Cougar, tasting the lasagna sauce with his pinky, realizes that it is in fact cocktail sauce. All of a sudden, tiny Jim Davis is dropped from a distance, just smoked. Larry Bird gets a call on his phone where Garfield says that he is manufacturing the sauce and smuggling it out in the lasagna. He also says that he is not the one you should be looking for. He's doing this against his will. Okay, so this is kind of the end of the movie. The screen zooms out into a television monitor, which zooms out again and focuses on the back of a chair. The chair spins around, and it's a tiny Greg Kinnear, CGI Greg Kinnear. Doesn't play himself at CGI. He says that with the cocktail sauce losing its importance in Indiana, people will finally have headspace to realize that he is from Logansport, Indiana. However, the door busts down and Larry, and Garfield are all there with lightsabers and Pikachus. They reveal that what Greg Kinnear was watching was taped and that they were on to him the whole time. They show him live footage of the lasagna trucks being driven into Kentucky, where they will be lost forever. Greg Kinnear breaks down crying while Hank Azaria reprises his role as Abraham Lincoln's statue from the last one and arrests him. Pink House is sung by Jesse Eisenberg, who plays John Cougar Mellencamp, plays while the camera pans out.
That was very well fantastic. The Greg Kinnear CGI is probably the best part of the movie.
I don't want to give goddamn Greg Kinnear another dime. I'd like to see him legally come after us from using his likeness. I bet he doesn't have the pockets.
Are you going to change up the likeness just a little bit?
No, it's going to be just full Greg Kinnear from the Jack Nicholson movie. As good as it gets. He was in that one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I'm using.
Yes. Okay, good. Good. All right. I mean, that'll be tough to beat.
Yeah, especially since I definitely misinterpreted what you said by make the worst combination of four people, because that's all I did. I did not think of a plot. That's for fine. Any of that.
That's fine. People probably couldn't sit through another one of that.
So. Yeah, I didn't do any of that. I just made a combination of four people that would be
okay.
Bad.
Give me the museum, because
so the museum
on social won't know. So
the museum is it's the Jimmy Carter Museum in Cumming, Georgia, and the combination of people is number one, Elizabeth Holmes.
Help me recover the vial.
Yep, that exactly. There is
I'm a big fan of Jimmy Carter.
The plot line is going to be that Ben Stiller's son has some sort of sickness, and she's going to try and sell him the fake vaccine or something for it. Then the other person is going to be Socrates. He literally invented irony, so he's like the original irony shit poster. And I know how annoying those people can be, since I am one. And then there's going to be Chris Angel. He's just going to do magic, and that's going to just annoy people. I'm sorry, Chris. It's annoying. And then
he says he's gonna mind freak people.
He's gonna mind freak. Don't worry, I can fix your son. I'll just mind freak him.
I'm gonna mind freak the shit out of you.
And then the last one's Lena Dunham, and that's just because it's Lena Dunham.
That's immediately the worst one. Wait, so you have Lena Dunham, Elizabeth Holmes, Chris Angel, and who?
Socrates.
Okay, right. Elizabeth Holmes and Lena Dunham, already an insufferable conversation in my head.
So, oh, God. Do you like dogs? No.
We have this really nice mural of Yoda on this wall. And this is Steve Jobs unveiling the iPhone 3G back in 2008.
Such an absurdly fake voice. It bothers the shit out of me.
She dresses like Steve Jobs.
Elizabeth Holmes going up to do karaoke.
Oh, what would she sing, though?
You spin me right round, baby, right round like a record, baby.
What's something that needs like a baritone voice? What's a song? She's just doing fucking beautiful. What's up?
It's a beautiful world. Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong, yeah.
Oh. I mean, I'm tweeting that out from the Barstool, or from the Lights, Camera, Barstool Twitter account.
Which one? Say,
what song would Elizabeth Holmes sing at karaoke?
Karaoke night?
Elizabeth Holmes.
Elizabeth Holmes Dance Dance Revolution game.
Elizabeth Rupert Holmes.
This is like the spirit of the night. Of the night. Oh, yeah.
What a condescending person she is. Just the way you're just looking at her. Just the picture of her holding the pill with her. Like, she's holding the fucking iPhone. Oh, my God.
Sherlock Holmes.
What's great are all the people that, like, have to backtrack their support for Elizabeth Holmes, but just don't do it because there's no upside to even doing it. No, literally. There's, like, a picture of her with, like, Joe Biden at something, and nobody asked any questions.
Highway to the Danger Holmes.
I thought about, like, before I went with the Indiana thing, I thought about, like, having Laker great AC Green as one of my people. Not because he's a horrible person, but, like, you know, I just wanted someone to be like, you played in the NBA, but you didn't have sex? He's like, yeah. Oh, man, this is going to be a long night.
Mm-hmm. I really want Elizabeth Rupert Holmes now. That would have been my go-to.
Elizabeth Holmes and Pirates of the Caribbean.
What's her name?
As Jack Sparrow.
Wait. Explain this joke to me.
It's just a mental exercise.
Oh, okay.
Instead of Johnny Depp doing it, just imagine Elizabeth Holmes like showing up on the ship wearing her black turtleneck.
You're the worst fraudulent CEO I've ever heard of.
Oh, but you have heard of me.
As Steve Jobs would say. There's no such thing as bad press.
They should the whole Theranos movie should just be real live actors, but the Elizabeth Holmes character should be a Muppet.
That'd actually be amazing. I would definitely watch that movie. Oh man, I'm looking at the picture of her now from the tweet you put out, Jeff. It's just amazing. The fucking Steve Jobs ripoff.
She dresses like Steve. And actually, the documentary I didn't think was that amazing, but she's just a fascinating person.
It's just incredible.
Fascinating.
I'm
very excited for the movie from Adam McKay.
Adam McKay. Free my dog, Elizabeth Holmes.
People are saying Hot Blooded by Foreigner.
Okay.
Any Elvis song. Slayer.
We're Creep. Caught in a trap.
which Creep song?
Creep? Oh, no. Creep by Radiohead?
Oh, yeah. Creep, Creep?
Yeah, could be TLC.
What do you call it? This is the end?
This is the end.
By the way, everyone keeps asking us to do Hot Rod and the other guys. I don't know how good those reviews would be.
It would just be us saying, remember that part? Yeah, that was funny. Because like, we all just love everything about it.
Like today I liked. Today I liked because we actually got down the rabbit hole a bit. Harold and Kumar, you know we're going to talk about fast food for a while after that. I love the other guys. We'll probably do a live watch the other guys or something.
Yeah.
Anything else? I'm sorry it's a shorter pod. We're gonna be figuring out how to do this. We'll do rankings here and there. We're gonna do eventually top five worst movies to be quarantined with, shit like that. I don't know. Well, we're gonna do streaming movies too that critics hate but we love. We'll mix it up. Bear with us. You know, obviously, again, we're a pod that, not to say we are in like a crisis like as a pod. But obviously, the backbone of our pod is seeing new movies. It's tough to do when no movies come out anymore.
Just make sure you're reading me and Jeff's blogs, because we're blogging a ton as we work from home. So
and please subscribe to our YouTube page. Yes. We had big plans for YouTube. We had a really cool thing that we were going to start doing. That's on delay. However, in the meantime, we have Monday. Every Monday, Westworld. Every Friday, we're going to have Clone Wars. And then middle of the week, every Tuesday and Thursday for the weeks to come, we'll be watching movies live. And you can sync it up with the Netflix Party app. And it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to doing it. So follow along. And then we'll probably think of some stuff here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Fun stuff to do, you know. So that's that. Anything else? Harold and Kumar Sunday.
Oh, I do like Harold and Kumar. I revitalized Neil Patrick Harris's career.
Did
you like?
No longer Doogie Howser after that.
I also had a Crave case this past weekend. Oh, and I'll reveal how much of the Crave case that I actually ate.
Did you blow it out?
I'm not going to reveal till Sunday.
Did you have one of those Dukes that they're like teleportations where it's in your butt and then it's in the toilet and there's no in between?
I will reveal.
This is a straight up portal.
It's just this. It comes out so fast. There's just I muted myself.
No, you're
good. We hear you.
Oh, the mute thing.
By the way, how happy are you that your daughter is not of the age to be at school where you don't have to like homeschool and teach?
I know. I was more so like just not having to explain to her what's going on. And yeah. I know that sin sounds real bad, but like if you're like five, this shit's got to make you really scared. Even if your parents are like, oh, don't worry about it. Because essentially what like school, your entire world's canceled. School's canceled. You got to stay inside and all that. Whereas my daughter is just, you know, throwing stuff. My new thing is I got a little Tykes basketball set and I've just been shooting on her.
Yeah. Just dunking on her.
But yeah, I'm glad she's not in school and I'm glad she kind of doesn't really get what's going on. Hopefully by the time where she's a sentient, she